Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And let's start today with some unanswered questions in Watertown.
Sound there from 2 years ago and the violent firefight between the Tsarnaev brothers and the Watertown police.
They exchanged gunfire for 4 minutes. After it was over, Tamerlan Tsarnaev was dead. Jahar Tsarnaev was on the run. And MBTA police officer Richard Donahue was gravely injured.
But even though events of that morning have been recently recounted in detail during Jahar Tsarnaev's trial, accounts of what happened remain inconsistent.
WBUR's Bruce Gellman has been investigating. He's created an audio timeline of the events of April 19th, 2013, starting with the escape of Danny, owner of the Mercedes SUV car hijacked by the Tsarnaevs.
Carjacked from 816 Memorial Drive at the gas station in Cambridge.
The Cambridge police dispatcher issues a BOLO, ordering officers to be on the lookout for the Mercedes SUV and the kidnappers. It's 12:26 a.m.
Suspects were two Middle Eastern males, one's 5'7", the second one was darker skinned. No description on clothing yet. Both were armed with firearms. 137 North Zulu 1.
Using the Mercedes onboard location service, police tracked the SUV to Watertown. It's 12:41 a.m.
And now the vehicle's moving now, units. In the area of 89 Dexter.
I saw the Mercedes, and you know, I radioed dispatch. I'm like, I have the vehicle that we're looking for.
Watertown police officer Joe Reynolds is the first cop to spot the SUV. He turns and follows it. A Honda Civic is in front. The suspects drive down Dexter Ave. Another Watertown officer, Sergeant John McClellan, night shift supervisor, goes after the cars too.
I'm right behind that vehicle, yeah. Let me catch up to you and then light him up.
12:44 a.m. The SUV and Honda turn onto Laurel, go halfway down the street, and suddenly stop at number 66. It's the home of Jennings Askey.
I was woken to what I thought were firecrackers, and I saw a tall man shooting down the street, shooting a handgun.
He lifts his arm up and he starts shooting at my cruiser.
Watertown Patrol Officer Joe Reynolds.
And could hear the bullets going off the hood, one that got lodged in the bottom of the windshield.
I hear the pop, pop, pop.
Again, Sergeant John McClellan.
Shots fired.
I take a round right through the windshield. Right through my headrest of my driver's side.
McClellan jumps from his vehicle and lets it roll forward, drawing fire from Tamerlan. The tactics the Watertown police use that night, they don't teach in cop school.
You know, in America, this has never, ever happened in the history of the United States, ever. No officers have ever taken bombs thrown at them in a gunfight.
These are real bombs, real bullets, and it's happening in real time.
There's a cop this way.
Watertown police officers Miguel Colon and Jeff Pugliese are next on the scene. Sergeant Pugliese is the department's sharpshooter. He puts on a bulletproof vest, jumps backyard fences, and testifies in court that he trades shots with Tamerlan Tsarnaev from 6 to 8 feet away. When Tsarnaev runs out of bullets, Officer Pugliese tackles him in the street. Again, Sergeant John McClellan.
My only thought at that point was, this guy's throwing bombs at us. He's either got another one or his brother's got a button. As soon as we get on him, he's going to blow us up. I'm like, no way. You know, I'm the supervisor of this guy. I can't let this guy go by himself. I got to help him. So I jump on top.
From her home on Laurel Street, Lizzie Floyd watches Jahar Tsarnaev escape in the Mercedes as police wrestle Tamerlan to the ground.
I saw him back up the SUV, gunning down the street, and I saw him run right over his brother and, like, saw the car go, like, like that. It was pretty nuts. I was worried there was a cop there, too, but I guess they got out of the way.
I go, Jeff, here he comes, watch out. I push off the body. He pushes off the body and the brother runs, misses both of us and runs over his brother. He gets caught up underneath the car. Hits up one of our cruisers and releases the body. He continues through the intersection. At that time, there was officers from different agencies responding. When the vehicle went through the intersection, some of them took shots at the vehicle.
266 shots were fired on Laurel Street.
At the trial, a state trooper testifies 56 shell casings were from the Tsarnaev's P-95 Ruger. It's the same gun used to kill MIT officer Sean Collier. Police cruisers from at least five different departments race down Dexter Ave into the intersection with Laurel Street. "I'm hit," cries MBTA officer Dick Donahue. Earlier that night, he was a first responder at MIT, where his best friend, Officer Sean Collier, was shot and killed. Donahue was also one of the first on the scene in Watertown.
111, there's supposed to be an officer down. Hazel and Dexter.
The bullet that hits Donahue is undoubtedly friendly fire, but neither the trial testimony nor the after-action report acknowledge that. Then, at exactly the same time Donahue is hit, something else happens four blocks north of the shootout.
Adam Street, Watertown, we have it.
An unmarked black state police truck, incorrectly reported stolen, is shot up. 10 bullets riddle the vehicle, occupied by a plainclothes Massachusetts trooper and Boston patrolman. The state report says a police officer fired on the truck, but makes no mention of the bombs.
We've got explosives being detonated.
Copy. Black pickup, Adam Street, Watertown. Explosives being detonated.
Adam Street!
Neither officer in the black pickup truck is injured. Police from distant departments hear officer down and self-report. On Laurel Street, scene of the shootout, traffic snarls.
All right, you guys, if I'm not calling out, you get a call sign. It's because you're stepping on each other. Keep on trying.
Watertown Fire EMS has trouble reaching Dick Donahue. He's bleeding out.
Where's the rescue? Rescue, hold on.
Rescue's in your room. They should be there now.
Police commanders say at least 16 first responders helped save MBTA officer Dick Donahue. He's effectively dead when he reaches Mount Auburn Hospital. Miraculously, he lives.
You know, I've been on the job for 30 years, and it's my proudest day to be in law enforcement.
Edward DeVoe is Watertown's chief of police. His small, cohesive force of officers who know the area and each other brought the shootout to an end in less than 4 minutes. But as out-of-town police flood into Watertown, Jahar Tsarnaev escapes in the SUV. It would take nearly 20 hours to find him.
Why didn't the police chase?
We made our best effort based on what we had at the time and what we knew at the time. Our biggest concern immediately then, particularly my Watertown officers, was going to the aid of Officer Donahue. He was in bad shape, and the fleeing suspect was second to him. He was our main priority.
That's Watertown Police Chief Ed DeVoe ending an audio timeline from WBUR's Bruce Gellerman. And Bruce is here with us now. So, Bruce, questions here raised by your meticulous recounting of the events of April 19th, 2013. Let's start with where Chief DeVoe ended, that everyone was responding to Officer Dick Donahue. Is that the reason why Jahar Tsarnaev was able to escape?
You know, I think it's a big part of the reason. When the police from outside the area hear shots fired, officer down, they really do start pouring into Watertown. It's really confusing. Within just a few minutes, you've got helicopters overhead, bomb squads, canine, and SWAT teams. Plus, at exactly the same time Donahue's hit, as you heard, a bomb goes off and there's a police car that's shot up. So it's really, you know, very chaotic and unorganized in those first few critical minutes.
But even in that chaos, though, does anybody see where Tsarnaev runs or follow after him?
Well, at Tsarnaev's trial, a Watertown police officer testifies that within a minute of Donahue being hit, he jumps into a cruiser and goes in hot pursuit. But neither the defense nor the prosecutor asked the officer what happens next. And Megna, this is really interesting. When I interviewed Watertown Chief of Police Ed DeVoe, who you just heard, it was 6 months after the shootout, and he was limited in what he could say to me. But I obtained documents from an award nomination for bravery that he submitted that says another Watertown officer actually blocked Tsarnaev's escape.
Blocked his escape? I haven't heard that before.
Right. It's amazing. Chief DeVoe writes that the officer is home, hears the shootout on the radio, and then drives down Spruce Street, just as Tsarnaev is driving the other way. Tsarnaev can't get around the vehicle, jumps out, and runs into backyards.
So, allegedly, we have a police officer who's there when Jahar Tsarnaev is running away. Is there a pursuit?
Well, that's the thing. We never learn. The narrative doesn't say. Listening to the police scanner, I think This is one I thought. I think the officer is mistaken for Tsarnaev by other cops. He's in plain clothes. He's pinned down. And what happens next? I don't know. This is really a mystery.
Okay. But what do we know then about the rapidly expanding efforts to find Jahar Tsarnaev?
Well, officials actually set up two perimeters. One is around the SUV. And for reasons that I don't understand, in the confusion, another one is established, a 20-block perimeter set up, but it's centered back at the shootout half a mile away.
So it's not centered at the SUV where Tsarnaev was last seen escaping the car.
Well, there are two. And so which one's the perimeter? Who's organizing it? It's difficult to say.
Okay. So, Bruce, overall, what is the key unanswered question for you then?
Well, for me, I started off investigating this 2 years ago with a very simple question. Why Watertown? I mean, the Tsarnaevs go to this maze of streets three times that night. They obviously know the area. They shop there. I found people who tell me they ate there. They may have worked out at gyms there. But did they have a reason for going there three times that night? I still don't know.
But we've got more of your reporting on this coming up tomorrow. Part two of Bruce's investigation into the Watertown manhunt will air on Morning Edition. You can hear what you just heard today at radioboston.org. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman, thank you so much.
You're welcome.